Okay, now this is always the fun part of the program where you get to interact with the guests. So we'll be right back with your phone calls on our special guest, Bruce Maccabee. Heck, I'm here in St. Louis. My staff, my team is in Los Angeles. My engineer walks in with the brightest Hawaiian shirt you'd ever see. I can see it 1,800 miles away. Back in a moment. Bruce, before we take calls, and they're all lining up for you here, in your work on Tesla, did you ever come across anything that tied him with the Philadelphia experiment? Of course, that being done in the 40s, where they tried to make some ships disappear.
Yeah, I didn't see anything connected with with Tesla on that. And in that particular case, I don't believe that they actually had a transference of a ship from one place to another. I realize there's some people running around claiming that, but I think the more rational explanation is this actually had to do with attempting to silence, maybe make a ship, quote, invisible, unquote, to magnetic mines. Apparently they were doing experiments with high currents on ships, and ships nowadays have wires running around them which carry currents to generate magnetic fields that counteract the magnetic field of the metal itself, so that a magnetic mine is less likely to detect the presence of the ship. And I suspect that that was the invisibility that was associated with those experiments. There really was that ship. It was in the port that it's talked about in Philadelphia, but the idea that it suddenly transported to Norfolk, I think the story goes, and then yes, came back again in a fraction of a second or something, and I forget the exact story. But Bill Moore, who wrote with Berlitz the Philadelphia experiment book, after doing research, he didn't believe it himself. So
it's an incredible story. I've interviewed an old fellow now by the name of Al Bielek, who's in his 80s. Al not feeling well these days. He's fighting, really, I think, fighting for his life. And I hope he pulls out of it. But it is indeed an incredible story that makes the fancy of the mind really start to wander a little bit, Bruce. Let's go to the phones. Let's pick up some phone calls for you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. Is this George?
It sure is. It better
George.
Be.
This is Tony from Homer, Alaska, the guy from the wilds that calls you once in a great while.
Well, welcome, Tony.
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoy your show, George, and we'd be lost without you up here. And Bruce, it's nice to hear from you, too.
Thank you.
What I was calling about was, have you really heard anything lately about the Paul Allen SETI project? You know,
he's got that array of radio telescopes that he, I think, donated $15 million to SETI.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, I kind of, you know, I just think that that's kind of like a depot to the skies for us and up into the stars. I think that'll be the first place that we make our point at as a human.
I think it's, I think it's a great project. Bruce, I don't know if you've done any work in the city.
You say you're from Alaska?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he's from
there
Homer,
was a very
Alaska.
famous UFO sighting, and UFO sightings are sort of a counterpart to SETI, I guess. You can listen to them being way out there, maybe get radio signals, or you can watch them right here. The Japan Airlines flight of November 18th, 1986, which was investigated by the Federal Aeronautics Administration in early 1987. That was a jumbo jet flying originally from Paris to Tokyo, and they were, as part of their trip, they were flying from northeastern corner of Alaska down to down to Anchorage, where they would refuel. And as they entered Alaskan airspace, saw strange objects flying around, and in particular two objects that were right in front of their airplane for about 10 minutes. First one above the other, and then they changed positions and became one beside the other. And the pilot reported that these things moved over to the right-hand side. He got them on the airplane radar. They were being tracked by military radar as well, And at least in a couple of points, apparently the military radar got a target that was not the airplane. In other words, the airplane plus something else. So that was that made national news back in 1987 as a result of the FAA investigation. So yeah. That's not SETI. That's a sort of a different version of looking for extraterrestrials, I guess.
Yeah, our problem here is, you know, our state, most people don't realize, is 2.2 times the size of Texas. It's more than twice as big as Texas. And we have about a 500,000 population.
Yeah, but when you order a martini, who pays any attention to the ice?
I love it. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, first-time caller line, you're on with Bruce McAbee on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Ann from San Francisco.
Hello there.
And when you were talking about the Iran incident in 1976, yeah. George asked the question, was it extraterrestrial? I have the answer.
All right. Tell us what and how.
Well, I have three friends, Americans, who were working over there at the time. And it was extraterrestrial. And what was said in a message was intelligent beings not of this earth were, you know, piloting the craft.
Hmm.
And what message was this?
Well, I don't want to. It was a message that was sent regarding that. Sent back to the state.
Well, if you got any information on the case, you could go to my website and send me an email through the website that would help me, you know, learn more information about it.
Right.
I should say that a couple of those people who were involved actually were at least in the United States. After the Ayatollahs took over, you know, a lot of people split from Iran, and there were sightings, TV shows called Sightings or Encounters or something
sightings.
Like that. About 10 years ago, I remember seeing one of these people being interviewed.
Well, I'm not sure it was either of my three friends. Two of them were military and one was a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known them
for a long Iranians.
Time.
I'm talking about Iranians who are in the United States who were part of that event. I think it might have been that they actually interviewed the pilot or one of the generals who was involved on one of the TV shows. But anyway, like I said, if you got any information, you go. There's a link on George Norrie's website, which is to mine, and you can... send me a message if you want, and I'd be happy to look into this.
Further. I did know several Iranian naval officers as well at Great Lakes that were on exchange.
Definitely send Bruce some information. How would you categorize the Iranian sighting, Bruce, compared to other sightings?
Well, a lot of sightings have their own unique aspects. Certainly the Iranian one is the fact that you had two jets, one after another, get disabled by an object when it was miles away. And that's a little bit frightening. This is evident. Well, people I have seen claims that we're building a barrier of satellites to shoot down flying saucers. People who claim that the SDI system, the Strategic Defense Initiative, was not about protecting us from Russian missiles, but from extraterrestrials coming to the Earth. And after the Iranian jet case, my response to that is, well, if they can turn off the electronics from a long distance away, what good does it do to have something up there ready to shoot at them?
And what's also interesting, Bruce, is they could have blown those jets right out of the sky, and they did not.
We probably, who knows what they could have done. I mean, we only know what they did do.
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't show any hostilities. But there have been cases where there have been some hostile intervention. True?
We know that down in Brazil there have been some nasty things that happened. People being abducted or maybe killed and not returned or something. I haven't made a study of that. There aren't many cases. There may be some, but there certainly aren't many. There are more cases of what you might call tolerance, that they tend to tolerate our presence. I remember back in the 50s, some reading about one case where a guy was out hunting, and he saw one of these things out in the woods, and he shot at it. He heard the bullet go careening off. But he, and then it went away. He didn't report it, you know, attacking him in return.
Right. Okay, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Tom, and I'm resting in Carlisle, Pennsylvania right now.
Well, good to have you with us, Tom. Go ahead.
A pleasure to talk to both of you. I do want to talk, I recall reading a story or hearing a story about how Nikola Tesla had taken the theory of the Earth being a huge capacitor, and it charged up the ground so much in Colorado Springs that he was creating a corona. People were walking around, and they were emitting sparks off their feet, and the horses were emitting sparks off their feet as they were walking through the town there. I wanted to know if you could comment on that. And also, the idea of sending a that particle beam or that arc of electricity up an ultraviolet beam, I guess, was that something that was akin to what we call a Jacob's ladder, which basically was like two coat hangers that sent an arc up two coat hangers?
Right.
I would like to hear about that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a Jacob's ladder type of thing. Let's see, the first question was what?
It was about how in Colorado Springs in the late 1800s,
that is
a corona created.
The reports were that he was generating so much current flow in the ground and the atmosphere that the metal things were glowing, people were getting sparks on their feet, horses were dancing from the arc discharges, and he was able to light light bulbs at 10 or 20 miles or something like that.
Yeah.
It was a situation you just couldn't,
think?
His experiments you just could not duplicate today. Now, you couldn't get away with it.
It's fascinating. It seemed like he was almost teasing the populace. I heard that the power stations were overloading all over the place.
He blew out the power station, as a matter of fact. that was the sort of the climax. He didn't know what was going on. He thought that his associate had turned off the power, and he went running into the building and found out that, well, what had really happened was the power station generator had been burned out.
Wow. Fascinating.
Now, the second question you had was what? Oh, the Jacob's ladder.
Jacob's ladder.
You know, Jacob's ladder that you see in these old-time black-and-white movies, it was really a takeoff on a lot of stuff that Tesla was doing, where you start an arc with these... The wires diverge going upwards. The spacing between them gets wider and wider, and you have an arc that heats the atmosphere. And because of the hot air in the arc, it rises upwards and gets longer and longer, and finally bursts, if you wish, or the arc breaks when the thing gets to the top, and another one starts at the bottom immediately. So you have these continual moving upward, a so-called Jacob's ladder.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same as his particle beam weapon.
Okay.
That would have been shooting a particle, a plasma beam out towards some target rather than having it sandwiched between two wires.
Okay, I appreciate that, because I was thinking of it as you were talking about it, the arc of a beam of electricity or going up another wave. I was thinking of how they send little flying devices in a microwave cone of energy, so to speak, and they have these little airplanes that just fly with no batteries or anything, you know, as long as they stay within that microwave wave, they can fly around. I heard about experiments like that. I just wonder if that was something similar that he was...
Well, microwave power, it is possible to beam power to a receiver, and if you can beam enough power, you could send a power to a receiver that was generating enough... absorbing enough power to drive a little motor, I suppose. This can be done, but that's not like what Tesla was doing. You don't have a plasma channel between your transmitter and your receiver.
You know, Bruce, those phasers that we see in Star Trek. Do you think Tesla, some of his technology, is pushing us in that direction? Because they're talking about they have laser weapons now, and I think they might even have some pretty big ones they're going to test soon.
Yeah, but the phaser thing, you know, was characterized by what Hollywood decided it was able to do.
Sure.
Nobody ever described how it worked.
But it looked good.
It's not related to our laser weapons. Our laser, there are types of lasers which are low power, essentially, that could blind you, so you don't want to look at them. The very high power laser weapons that they are working on, for example, in the Missile Defense Agency, formerly the Strategic Defense Initiative Office, those lasers are the size of a house, when you take into account all the stuff that goes with them.
Right.
And except for the one that they mounted into a Boeing 747, the Air Force is going to try to shoot down missiles. I actually worked with did some work on some of those lasers 20, 30 years ago, so I have an idea what I'm talking about. You're talking about tens of kilowatts to megawatts worth of power, and it takes a major installation to be able to create a laser that does this. That's why they're not all over the place, you might say. The first people to use it may well be the Israelis if they find that a missile is heading towards them, because there has been attempts to build a tactical laser system that could shoot down missiles and small aircraft. I don't know how many have been actually built, but that's what we consider now conventional technology. Is not related to what Tesla was doing, and it's not related it's sort of related to power beaming, I guess. But
do you think any of his work, of course, we have the neutron bomb invented by Sam Cohen. Do you think Tesla may have already stumbled across that when he talked about some of his weaponry?
No. That's all stuff that was into atomic power, using atoms and so on. This sort of was coming about at the end of Tesla's life. He didn't really get into quantum mechanics and relativity and stuff that plays roles in what we might call the most modern physics.
Was he an educated man, Bruce? And by that I mean...
He spoke seven languages.
Okay.
Knew about... He could recite poetry and so on. As a matter of fact, he was reciting a poem. Was it by Goethe or Faust? I can't remember. At the time, the solution to the motor problem popped into his head. He was standing there looking at the sun. Now, this is portrayed in the script that I wrote. He's standing there looking at the sun, and all of a sudden he saw this thing appear in his brain rotating, according to his own description. And he was able to analyze it and realize what he was looking at in his head.
He had 700-plus inventions or patents,
right.
Didn't he? The guy
he
was
said
an
that everything
absolute
that
genius.
He made that he had worked on in his brain first. Everything that he built, according to what he designed it in his head, it worked the first time. Furthermore, he claimed that he could build a machine in his head and set it running, come back later and see which parts had gotten worn out the most.
What a mind. Stay with us. Bruce Maccabee, our guest, will finish up with your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, of course, Friday into Saturday, and we're going to have some tremendous open lines for you. Make sure you're part of that program on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Bruce, I want to thank you for hanging in so long with your cold and everything else. It's just about 30 minutes to go, and you are done. Actually, less than that. Let's go to the phones now. We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast with Bruce Maccabee. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Bruce. This is Jerry down here in Spring, Texas.
Hey, Jerry, go ahead.
Listen to you on that 740 there.
Sure.
Tomballer. I think I might be able to shed a little light on how they... hardwire communication between the pilot and co-pilot broke down. You know, you have a transmitter and receiver, and the transmitter being the part you talk through, and the receiver the part that goes to the ear. And the part to the ear has a coil wrapped around a permanent magnet. And the transmitter rattles these carbon crystals around there and varies the voltage that goes to this coil and causes the magnetic flow to come positive or negative depending on how loud it is or what, but if the kind of floats in the middle of the diaphragm does. And if you know, most of your UFOs are always reported in messing up everything that's magnetic. If they shot those things out of that back end of that UFO, it probably was something to do putting out a beam of a magnetic pulse that overrode the earphones.
Well, that's certainly a theory one could consider. It would be a huge magnetic field, as far as we understand it.
Well, it wouldn't take much, you know, because they could make those earphones transmitters work off of as much as a less than a volt and a half, you know, maximum, and that would cause it. And as far as Tesla, yeah, George said something about that Tesla casita. I watched a show that was on the Discovery Channel there, and it said that he was trying to show off and gonna send Admiral Byrd an array and light up the Aurora Borealis and all up there, and he drew so much current that the one of his transformers blew out. And of course, everything he uses is an induction coil. Anytime you don't cut the current down slow on an induction coil, well, it's going to have a bolt of lightning go out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, every induction coil, who wouldn't have automobiles or a telephone or nothing else, it wouldn't be for his coils, because they have induction coils even on OS telephones.
And didn't and thanks for your call, Jerry. Did he also not send some kind of like resonant sound vibrations and almost topple the building, Bruce?
Yeah, well, he was big into resonance, electromagnetic as well as mechanical. He built a shaking device that he could clamp onto a part of a structure and cause the structure to vibrate. And apparently he did... I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently he did have this thing clamped onto a girder or some part of the structure of the building where he worked, his laboratory in New York City, and suddenly realized that it was causing such large vibrations in the structure that it might come down, so he quickly turned it off and decoupled it. But, yeah, that he made some comment that if he was, what was it? He could split the earth in half or something if he had enough power.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Howdy.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
George, Bruce, it's a wonderful honor to talk to you. I'm David from Port Charles, Florida.
Okay, mm-hmm. David. Thank you.
I'm going to be on the phone tomorrow night because I'm an abductee. I got a ton of information about UFOs and
great.
What they're all about.
Love to hear from you.
Area 51 and all that. I'm glad to find a forum to talk about that. But this is my question. Tesla knew an awful lot about Earth energy, for lack of a better term. And I heard a rumor that he was in association for a while with a guy named Leet Skalman, immigrant from Latvia. Yeah, who, if you look up coralcastle.com, you'll see what he built by himself out of coral, which is not an easy material to work with, and some of the pieces weigh 15 tons. He has a 15-ton door that a child can open because it's balanced so well on jewels. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Well, I have read some about the Coral Castle, but I didn't. I wasn't aware of any connection between Tesla and that.
And old Ed Leet Skalman. Yeah, I didn't know they knew each other, David. Did they know each other well, do you know?
From what I heard, they had worked together for a short while. And that's part of where Leet Skalman got his ideas on how to find where the Earth energy was the best.
Interesting.
Because at one time he moved the entire Coral Castle from one location to another, 29 miles down the road.
That is true.
And it's because he detected a better energy source.
I wonder if Tesla knew how he moved those coral blocks around.
Well, apparently it was levitation, because the first and only time Leet Skalman was on television, he said, "I know how they built the pyramids. It was with levitation, and I have the secret." and yeah, I'll die with it.
I think he knew something about magnetics.
Oh yeah.
He believed that every object had the ability to be magnetized. Thanks, David. Appreciate your call. Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
This is Tim from Liberal, Missouri.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Oh, wow. I'm on the show.
Yes,
over
sir.
10 million people or so listening. Okay, guys. I'm really wondering is if the heart of man is ever going to change to where we'll get off of trying to control other people and get off of this oil.
Well, you know what, Tim? That's a great question, but not for tonight, because Bruce is not going to have that kind of expertise for us.
Well, I do have a heart, and I do burn oil.
West of the Rockies. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, this is Randy from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Randy.
Welcome. I had talked to you on March 2nd about Tesla, and
yes.
I did forget to say thank you for allowing me to be on your program, because sometimes I get real excited and just, like, go off on my high horse. But I was tasked by President Reagan in 82 to investigate Tesla because some of the questions that I had asked him. And I did a tremendous amount of research. Matter of fact, I'm the one that's got three patents that are L5, miscellaneous. And anybody out there that knows what I just said about patents knows what I just said. That's very, very rare. One of them is sort of based on Tesla. I can tell you anything you want to know about Tesla. I can tell you about what's in Area 51. I can tell you about the DOLs. I can tell you why Chernobyl went. I can tell you why the Challenger went up. The reason why I'm starting to talk now is my wife passed away on February 17th, and what the military and what Congressman Hayworth and Kyle and Senator Kyle and DeConcini, my friends, and what they have now done to me, because they just took all my stuff, won't pay me, and off they're running. I can tell you about the particle beam cannon. I can tell you about as well as transmission.
Well, were they supposed to pay you, Randy? Were you supposed to get paid?
Yes. Matter of fact, I did give them a free thing, which was based on Tesla, which is his open-end vacuum tube, which was part of the particle beam cannon there for that was at DIA, and that was Dr. Coleman.
All right. Bruce, do you have a question of Randy at all?
It sounds to me like you ought to have him on your show.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I can tell you what Tesla discussed with Einstein on the boat in, 1932. I can tell you what happened to the microfilm. I can tell you what happened to his papers. I can tell you about Trump. I can tell you about Willis George.
Well, hold on, Randy. We're not going to be able to get all that. But let me ask you, of the last call we just had,
yep.
He said that Tesla had met and known Edward Leedskalnin, who fascinates me, based on the Coral Castle work that he did down in Florida. Did your research come across that?
No, the name never appeared anywhere.
Ah, okay.
That's part of the problem. There's the myth of Tesla, and then there's the truth of Tesla. And a lot of people wish to believe the myth. Tesla was great. He did a lot of wonderful things. He got Wardenclyffe to work. Matter of fact, he was able to transmit energy for 230 miles. And then after that, that's why J.P. Morgan closed the place. Matter of fact, when J.P. Morgan started disassembling Wardenclyffe, the stuff that was underground, all his basically his generators, he dumped them in the middle of there in the Jersey side there, going between Manhattan Island and New Jersey,
like
White Star Line.
Like, yeah, Bruce's movie script, what would have happened had a Hitler type gotten a hold of Tesla's beam weapon?
Actually, he tried selling it to the British, but he asked for too much money, and the British went for William Watts, which is the radar system, for 10 million pounds sterling instead of the 14 Tesla was asking for. And, actually, the Germans really were interested in Tesla, but not as much as the Russians were. The Russians, until the fall of the Russian Empire, they had two permanent KGB agents in the U.S. gathering anything they could always find on Tesla. Matter of fact, because I met one of them, he lived here in Phoenix. And then the Army also had two people here for the Soviet military. They also had two. So there was always a total of four people always gathering information on Tesla.
Okay. Well, Randy, thanks for your expertise on that. Whatever, Tesla, a lot of people are interested in this guy, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast.
RV movie.
Yeah, this is
right.
Michael.
Hey,
and I was calling in regards to a comment you had made earlier in the show about controlling the weather. And I have a DVD that my sister had made of a show that she found about Tesla. And it basically goes along with the book Man Out of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the video version of that. And one towards the end of it, it makes a brief comment that he did make a claim that he could control the weather with all the different things that he was doing. Mm-hmm. And because of the like Wardcliffe and the electromagnetic transmission of which, and when I was listening to that the other day, I was like, oh wow. So I mean, the entire harp thing was like, you know, a possible variation of the ideas that he had.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the other thing is that with Tesla, a lot of the paperwork is kind of a mystery, because it seems that they said that a lot of his ideas and stuff was in his head. I mean, he kept instead of writing it on paper, he kept a lot of his ideas in his mind as to put them on paper. So when he died, he took a lot of his things with him that he was working on.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But like I said, you know, when you guys are talking about the weather, and he had made that comment about that he could control the weather, like the aurora, when he was working on the Wardcliffe Tower, and he was causing similar things to the Northern Lights.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Tesla would be working on right now, Bruce, if he were still alive?
Oh, well, he probably would be working along with a lot of other people on anti-gravity.
He'd probably be able to invent it, too.
And remember, he's into building things, not just thinking about them. So he would probably be in nanotechnology, building things smaller and smaller. Using exotic materials for construction. He might be into electronics, faster and faster transistors and devices for computers and stuff like that. It's hard to say. There's a lot more things going on now than there were back in his day. Back in his day, 100 years, we're talking only 100 years ago, you know, one person could know most of what everything was known about electronics, for example. Nowadays, it'd be almost impossible, even if you're a genius, to study enough about everything to know all the aspects of the electronics part. And this has nothing to do with all, and this is aside from knowing parts of all sorts of other physics and chemistry and biology and so on that we know now. In the last 100 years, it's been like a bootstrap operation. You know, you lift yourself by your bootstraps.
Sure.
The whole human race has lifted itself by its bootstraps by pushing, studying nature, studying things, and building devices to make measurements and learning how to create theories that make the measurements make some sense, and the theories predict some other things happening to make that causes you to make more instruments, to make more measurements. A combination of a theory and experiment working together, we now have devices that can measure things that weren't even thought of 100 years ago.
I would love to have seen
100 years ago, let's say it's at 1900, there were still people who would not agree that the smallest pieces of material were atoms. Sort of like the flat earthers of those days, I guess. The atomic theory was still in debate. And then,
Can you imagine, how far
atomic
we've gone?
Nuclear radiation was used to prove the atomic theory. And Rutherford's experiments, when he determined that an atom had a hard core center, rather than being a mixture, like they said, called the plum pudding model of an atom with a positive charge, with negative charges embedded within it. His experiment showed that it was more an atom is more like a solar system, and at that point, people began to believe in things like protons and electrons and so on.
Let's go to our first time caller line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
My name is Ralph. I'm calling from Detroit.
Okay. Where'd you go?
early 60s, one morning I woke up kind of early, and they were running a test pad on the television. And we didn't have a color television at that time, but they were able to produce a color signal on a black and white set. And to this day, I've yet to have been able to wrap my mind around this technology, you know. And it kind of like make me think like your wildest imagination is top secret, you know what I'm saying? Like a lot of technology is being suppressed.
Well, it's being suppressed for money, or it's being held back for other reasons. And again, how many years do they hold back the technology of Tesla? For example, the wireless ability, which is what he would have been able to do right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
a lot of the people who support the research, you know, have to make money out of it.
So that's what it's all about, Bruce.
If you got a whole handful of cards, and you lay them down one at a time, trying to do it in the order that gives you the maximum benefit.
No doubt about that. Bruce, your books, they still available?
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon, or I think there's some other internet bookstore things you can get it from, or you can contact me.
Okay, well, thanks for holding out so long, Bruce. Go get some rest, okay?
I go rest my voice now.
Oh, my God. He's very sick. Bruce McAbee, Dr. Bruce McAbee, holding on for 3 hours for us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, on our next program, as I mentioned, it'll be our Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. I think we'll make them creepy open lines for a change. We'll sit back and scare each other with some incredible stories. And then this weekend, Ian Punnett, of course, will be doing his Coast to Coast Live program, 6 p.m. Pacific time. I've got George Knapp coming in to guest host the program on Saturday. He's going to talk about Area 51. I'll be in for Art on Sunday, and then we'll get the week going again. I mean, it just keeps going. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.